Welcome to the Oh Wow Science Podcast. This podcast is brought to you by the UAF Adult Education Program at the Unalaska Learning Center. At UAF, we honor and recognize that we are on Indigenous Unangam Dinangin land where this podcast is being recorded. My name is Tatiana, and my goal is to bring you fun science facts and ideas every Friday at noon and Saturday at 4 p.m. on KUCB. Episode 2 of Oh Wow Science. So first, I'm going to start with some announcements we have from UAF. We have a really cool moccasin slippers class coming up. It's only a week long, March 16th through the 21st. It's all online via Zoom, and it's a $30 fee only. Now, if you'd like to join, we still have a couple of spots. Please contact Jill at UAF at uaf-bbc-onalaska@alaska.edu or give us a call at 581-1876. We will also have other classes coming up in the spring, and we are always looking for students interested in getting their GED or learning English or any other skills they might need, like resume writing, job skills, and so on. So we're here for you with those services. You can also find our Facebook page, Unalaska Learning Center, that has our contact information on there as well. I also need to make a correction to my last episode. During my website resources, I quoted ibird.com when I really meant ebird.org. But iBird is another app. It's useful if you have a smartphone and you want to identify birds. There's lots of apps out there to help you. I always go out birding, make sure I have my phone on me. My favorite is the Sibley app, if you're interested. There's also others like the Audubon app, Maryland Bird ID, National Geographic, iBird, and so on. So they're actually really awesome, but you know, either one you can check out is useful for your bird knowledge. So let's get started with today's episode, which is going to be about medicine. The medical, technological, and scientific progress we as humans have made in order to be where we are today. I'm going to talk about how medicine has allowed us to thrive as humanity, live in every corner of the globe like we do, and basically populate the whole world by getting rid of many of the diseases, keeping us alive much longer than we used to live, and so on. There's a saying that goes, if you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go together. And for me, I think that's the goal in medicine, technology, and science. The way scientists and doctors work together to go far in keeping humanity, each other, as safe and healthy as we can. It really is an amazing time to be alive right now. Technology has changed the way we live, and maybe sometimes we use it too much, of course, but the fact is that technology is also keeping us alive longer and healthier than we've ever been in the history of humanity. And yes, I said healthier. I know it may not seem like it when we're sitting on the couch and moving less, especially these days, but if we zoom out, we know that people are living longer, that children are dying less of childhood diseases, that we have cleaner water than we've ever had before, we're not ingesting parasites and bacteria through our water, we're able to eat vegetables and fruit at any time of the year, and even take vitamins and medicine when something is lacking in our body. Those are all scientific and technological advances that have created the world we live in today. And especially living in Alaska. It's easier now than it's ever been before. We've got comforts, that our ancestors didn't have. We are suffering less through the winter in Alaska, even if the darkness and cold can be really hard on me. I personally have to take lots of vitamin D. But the fascinating thing is these major advances have only really happened in the last 100 years or so. Basically, we've changed how we live dramatically in the last 100 years. And speaking about diseases and medicine, this topic can be kind of dark in when we look back in the history of diseases in the past. People were really suffering in the past, not knowing whether their kids are going to make it to adulthood, not knowing if the water they were drinking was safe from bugs and bacteria, not knowing if there was going to be a new pandemic around the corner that would wipe entire villages off the map. Of course, we don't live in a fairy tale world right now, but I'm just trying to paint a picture of how much worse things used to be so that we can really dive into this upcoming topic of medicine in this episode. For a major example of the past, have you heard of the bubonic plague during the Middle Ages? Well, it was actually a series of plagues that lasted for centuries. So it wasn't just a one-time thing. It would pop up again and again around the world until about the 19th century. And it's estimated that it killed between 30 and 60% of the world population. That's why we know a lot of about the plague. But you might think, okay, that's the only big one, and it was a long time ago, you know, the Middle Ages. Well, not really. Until the 20th century, which is 1900s, people were constantly at risk of major illnesses all the time. So recently, we've talked a lot about the Spanish flu, like in the news. The Spanish flu pandemic of 1918, we are comparing it a lot to the COVID pandemic. And basically, it was just so awful that it really left a mark on our history. And to give you some numbers of that, and this is just 100 years ago, it's estimated that 50 million people worldwide died. And in the United States, about 675,000 deaths. If we compare that to the current COVID pandemic, we're currently at over 450,000 deaths in the United States alone. So that tells you this is another big time in history that will not be forgotten. So back to 100 years ago, we have the Spanish flu pandemic. It was a period in history where disease also started to get spread around the world much easier. It was right after the Industrial Revolution. We suddenly had more technology. We could travel much faster. More people were moving around the world and traveling. We also had the First World War at that time. So we had all those soldiers traveling. And so we became even more at risk to these deadly diseases that maybe before the Industrial Revolution would have been kind of kept on their continent at least. This was also a time in history when we were only just starting to understand how disease truly worked. And I present to you the very important idea called germ theory. This was a major breakthrough for medicine in the late 1800s, which is the idea that it was certain little invisible germs like bacteria, parasite, viruses, you know, things you can't see that get into our bodies and are the reason that we get sick. Germ theory at this time in the late 1800s basically changed the world, because before germ theory, people didn't really know what made us sick. And so the solution to prevent major illnesses wasn't working necessarily. Like, people used to think that diseases came from bad air or like pollution, like polluted water or polluted air or even bad smells, and that you couldn't infect other people. So you can see how much different germ theory has opened our eyes to what exactly is causing diseases and how we can prevent it, obviously, is always the goal. And I think during this time of the Spanish flu pandemic, among other things, it really accelerated the importance of medicine to understand germ theory and to really investigate the sources of how we get sick in order to prevent diseases in the future. The Industrial Revolution also helped us have the technology to do that, and that's a big part of medicine, to be able to have the microscopes, to be able to do x-rays, to be able to see on a very small scale in the first place is the key to understanding more about these germs in order to fight them. Because if we can't see them, which was the case before, right, we didn't have the technology, how were we supposed to figure out how we got sick? So today, for example, some of our microscopes fill an entire room. Like, just one microscope is a whole room. That's how crazy the technology has become, that we can see really, really small things with our microscopes. So here, now, we have this combination. We have technological advances. We have this new understanding of germ theory and the evidence that pandemics are awful, awful tragedies. And we need to go all in and try to stop the world from these experiences. And this is how we find ourselves today, which is why I want to talk to you about the history of vaccines. So today, in the United States, we vaccinate or recommend vaccinations from 17 different deadly diseases that we may encounter in this country. Before preparing this episode and before this COVID pandemic, I never thought about vaccines. Never thought about vaccines I had gotten as a kid. I remember trying to enroll in college and they had vaccination requirements in order to enroll, just like we do in schools, but I didn't even know which ones I had. And I think I had to get a few vaccinations that people get as adults. And I just went to the school clinic to do it. But I wasn't keeping track of that at all, which is a really lucky and privileged position I have to be living in this country, because I don't have to think about how safe I am from all these deadly diseases. They're not really around us that much. There's outbreaks in other places, though, where people are not vaccinated. But most of the time, we are lucky to not be affected. So for this episode, I needed to do some learning about these routine vaccinations. Like I said, the United States, we ask people to be vaccinated from 17 different deadly diseases. And I want to bring you some examples of why we do this. What those diseases used to do. And where we find ourselves today with this new COVID vaccination, so that we can have all the information that we can to make the informed choices for our lives. So here we go. History of vaccines. Vaccines have been around for more than 200 years. And it all started with smallpox. There was an English scientist in 1796 called Edward Jenner. And he's credited to be the first to have invented the first vaccination. And, quote, his work is said to have saved more lives than the work of any other human. And you'll see why in a little bit. So what happened was that he realized that milkmaids at the time were immune to smallpox, this deadly disease. And so he decided to make an experiment. He introduced cowpox, which is the smallpox of a cow, which is what milkmaids were milking. And he put this cowpox pus into this kid's arm, like in the cut of this kid's arm. And then, you know, let him heal. And then he introduced this kid to smallpox, a very highly infectious, deadly disease. And the kid didn't get sick. And so now you might be wondering, that's gross. Why would he do that? It's called experimentation. But no, we don't do this like that anymore. This was the 1700s. But the reason he did this is because smallpox used to be a huge tragedy. People would try all kinds of things in order to survive, because 3 out of 10 people that got sick used to die. That is a huge 30% death rate. So that tells you how we're living in a very different world, because smallpox just used to, you know, really, really devastate populations. So what happened is, since, you know, this first experiment, the smallpox vaccine, you know, throughout the years evolved, and finally in 1966, the world came together, different countries, and said, we're going to get rid of smallpox. This is an awful disease. We can't have 30% of our people dying. We need to get rid of smallpox, which is called eradication. And so here we are, free of this awful disease that killed so many people. And it happened very quickly. So like I said, 1966, the world had a plan to eradicate smallpox. 1972, United States has stopped vaccinating because smallpox was completely gone from the world. So we don't even have to vaccinate. So maybe if you were born before 1972, you got the smallpox vaccine. But since then, we don't even need to worry about it. It doesn't exist in nature anymore. Can you imagine this awful disease that existed for 2,000 to 4,000 years has been completely eliminated due to a vaccine? Can you imagine not having to worry that you're one in the three people that who could die if you get this disease? And that's the kind of modern medicine that we want to celebrate. That's why we want to support science and technology and the work that people do every day to keep us healthy. So another example of a serious disease that is now kept at bay with vaccinations is measles. Measles affects mostly children, but it is very dangerous and can lead to complications like inflammation of the brain, blindness, and seizures. It's also fatal. And to give some numbers on what people used to live with, is that between roughly 1855 and 2005, measles has been estimated to have killed about 200 million people worldwide. And that does not include all the children who suffered complications and survived with lifelong effects like blindness. And there was another example. There was an outbreak in 1850s in Hawaii of measles that killed 20% of their population. So finally, in 1954, a scientist named Maurice Hillman developed the very first successful vaccine for measles. And by the year 2000, measles basically does not exist in the United States. What a relief, am I right? What makes it worse is that this is a childhood disease. But there are still parts of the world where measles occurs today, and it occasionally makes its way into the U.S., you know, due to travel. So that is why we continue to vaccinate our children against this awful disease. And just to give you another number, Maurice Hillman's measles vaccine is estimated to prevent 1 million deaths per year. So every year we're alive, 1 million people are alive because of Maurice Hilleman's vaccine. Some other diseases that are no longer spreading with the help of vaccines are polio, which can cause paralysis and death. It's been eliminated in the United States, but it is still present in other countries. Or mumps, which is another childhood disease. Or hepatitis A and B, which badly affects your liver. And we also have chickenpox, shingles, whooping cough, and others. These are all part of the 17 vaccinations that in the United States doctors recommend for children and adults. So in conclusion, there was a study that found that vaccines have saved 37 million children's lives since 2000. And that's only in the last 20, 21 years. 37 million kids are alive because of vaccines. And over the lifetime of those born between 2000 and 2030, this study also showed that 120 million deaths will be prevented because of vaccinations. So all those kids who are born after 2000 and on, 120 million will continue to live because of the technology and medicine that we've developed. And out of those 120 million, 96 million will be due to the measles and hepatitis vaccines together. So that was a very brief history of vaccinations that I learned very recently. And just the amazing advances we've made in science and medicine and how many people we've been able to save just with vaccinating our kids early in their life. So let's move our focus to today's pandemic and how the world scientists are frantically trying to find a solution to this COVID pandemic as fast as they can, because nobody wants a repeat of those tragedies I just talked about. We've seen what they do. We don't want that again. Especially if we can prevent it with medicine. So it's been over a year now that scientists started working on the vaccine, which was December of 2019 is when it all kind of blew up around the world. And this whole pandemic has been like a huge worldwide scientific experiment unfolding right in front of our eyes. And the reason we have a vaccine now, only a year later, the reason that we've been so successful is that we've actually been studying viruses like these for some time. We've had the bird flu, we've had other coronaviruses that have popped up over the years. So we kind of had a running start with all of this information already. And so we kind of hit, a scientist had kind of hit the ground running. Another reason that this all happened kind of quickly, you know, a year is kind of quick for the vaccine when you look at previous, when you look at the history of vaccines. But another reason is because this has been a worldwide effort. It's been kind of like a whole world experiment, and this isn't just a couple of scientists working in their labs by themselves. It's not even just one country, but it's the collaboration of many countries around the world, of a bunch of scientists, thousands of scientists around the world. And many governments around the world basically closed down, as we know, everything else, but opened up funding for science and said, fix this now. It's a big responsibility, but science is a collaboration. And that's how together we can go further than any single person or scientist can go, which is what's been kind of amazing of how much collaboration there has been this past year in order to solve the COVID pandemic. So now we have several vaccines available for the public after only 1 year, and two of them are above a 90% success rate. And I just want to say that that is a really great number. Keep in mind that out of the 17 vaccines that we already vaccinate for, they're also about 80 to 90% success rate. So there is actually no known vaccine that's 100%. The measles vaccine does come close at 99.7 effective. But the reason we can't have 100% vaccine is because individual people have different immune systems. And vaccines depend on your immune system by asking your immune system to make antibodies for the disease. So that's just the little individual variation you see there. So I thought I would start talking about the COVID vaccine with kind of a series of questions I imagine you already might have, because I had them. So I got three questions here I'm going to answer for you. So question one, what is the COVID vaccine? What is inside of it? Can I get the virus from the vaccine? This is probably the most important question. And I had the same question too before I did any reading about the vaccine. It's so common not to really understand what vaccines are, because most of us get them as babies and never have to worry about them again. And also most of us are not scientists working in a lab analyzing these invisible germs, right? And myself, even as a scientist, I never had to think about vaccines in detail. And I was also a bit afraid of this new COVID vaccine at first because I had no idea what was actually in it. So the gist of it is this. These vaccines only have the mRNA of the protein that's on the outside coating of the virus. So it has no virus in it at all. The way it works is this. If you just use your imagination and imagine with me a little bit, this virus exists inside a little bubble or a room. The virus itself and this room is not like biological material. It's just virus stuff hanging out inside of this bubble. But on the outside of this bubble slash room are proteins that are biological that stick out like a key lock mechanism. And the way they work is when they get inside your body, this protein key lock opens the door to one of your cells. Tricky, huh? And when the lock opens, the door opens. And through this door, the virus gets into your cells and starts creating massive chaos, replicating and spreading itself all over your body. That's when you get sick. We don't want that. Obviously. So what scientists figure out is they don't even need to show the virus to your body for your body to start making antibodies. All they need is to show your body this key lock protein. You know, the thing that's sitting on the outside of the bubble. And your body gets into gear making antibodies to fight whatever this foreign thing is. And to clarify, antibodies are the fighters in your body. That's what your body is making when it sees something new. So it comes across something foreign, like if you have a flu, your body starts taking pictures of the flu virus and telling the rest of your cells to start making fighter cells or antibodies. Do you ever wonder why being sick usually lasts around 2 weeks? That's because that's the average time your body needs to make antibodies once it comes across a virus inside. And the cool thing is that your body never forgets this picture. So once you have antibodies to something, you'll always have them, which is awesome. That is why vaccines are amazing. And you can get a bunch when you're a kid. Your body makes all these antibodies and you're basically set for life. And that's because vaccines train the immune system, and that's it. And that's what we're trying to do with the COVID vaccine, just like we do with the 17 other vaccines we recommend for children and adults, is vaccines do not cause disease, especially this COVID vaccine, because it has no virus material in it whatsoever. And you can't get the virus if there is no virus inside of it. And a side note is, you might think, well, what about the flu? I can get the flu every year, or I have to get the flu vaccine every year. Well, the flu virus is tricky, and it mutates a bunch. And that's why we need a vaccine every year for that one, because the picture that your body takes of the flu vaccine changes every year. So, you know, the next year, those antibodies your body made don't work on the new mutated flu. So anyway, this is what really, really helped me feel safe about these COVID vaccines, knowing that they had absolutely no virus in it whatsoever, but just a little protein that shows our bodies not to trust this protein ever again, because, you know, it's a foreign thing. It's not part of us. And another neat thing about these vaccines is that they are mRNA vaccines, which means they are super short-lived. They completely disappear after a while, but your body is left with the image of it, right? The image that it captured. So one scientist described this COVID vaccine as a snapshot. You know, you see it for 10 seconds and then it's gone, but you can't unsee it. So you're all set to fight it in the future if you see it again. Okay, question number two that you might have is, what about people feeling sick when they get the vaccine? Isn't that scary? Well, symptoms like fatigue, headache, your arm being sore from the shot of the vaccine, and even having a fever for a day are completely normal after a vaccine. And do you know what this means, having these symptoms? Well, it means that your body's working hard. That's all it means. It's working hard at making those antibodies. It's basically pretending it's sick. It's saying, oh, hey, there's a foreign guy in here. He doesn't belong. We got a code red, make antibodies, full response ahead. Or something like that. I don't know. This obviously is going to make you tired, you know, depending on your immune system. You know, some people feel more of these symptoms than others, but that's just your body fighting, making antibodies, but you're not actually sick. And from what it looks like, these symptoms only last about a day or two. And I just want to say, you should be proud of your body for working so hard for you. A bad sign would be if your body was like, eh, I don't care about this invader. I give up. Let it take over. Which it obviously doesn't do, because you're alive and you're listening to this episode. Okay, we got our final question here. Question three. What about these virus mutations that are coming out of the UK, Brazil, and South Africa? Okay, virus mutations are a totally predictable thing. Like I said, they happen with the flu, and they will happen. The more people that keep getting sick because the virus has more chances to mutate, the more people have it. And that's why it's important to stop it. It's super important to stop the virus from, you know, getting everywhere into every person, because then it's just can get worse and worse, and more mutations will happen. And we knew this would happen, because it happens with every virus. Everything mutates. That's biology. But viruses can't mutate if they can't replicate. That means the less people get sick, the less chances there are of random mutations. Okay, so in conclusion, as of today, we have 13% of Alaska has already been vaccinated with at least one dose. and we're one of only four states that have surpassed 10% of the population being vaccinated. So good job, Alaska. And finally, I'm not a doctor. So this episode is just me coming to you as a scientist who just wants to bring you accurate information on vaccinations, tell you about the history of all the amazing things we've already done in science in the last 100, 200 years, and bring you accurate information about what is this COVID vaccine, what's inside of it, how does it affect us, and all the things I just talked about. But if you want to read more information from real doctors about vaccines and COVID, you can visit cdc.gov. It has information about COVID, but it has also information about everything else and all the other diseases and safety regulations and anything you might want to know about your health. You can also call our local clinic at 581-1202. Another really interesting website I came across was historyofvaccines.org. It had a lot of information about the whole history that I talked to you about of vaccines, and just really interactive material and articles and really interesting facts. So if you want to learn more about the history, go there. I hope you really enjoyed today's episode. And as always, keep your ears open and your minds open for future Oh Wow Science episodes every Friday at noon and Saturday at 4 p.m. on KUCB in Unalaska. To contact me with ideas for future episodes or with any questions, email me at tdolgushina@alaska.edu, and that's spelled tdolgushina @alaska.edu, or give me a call at 581-1876.